From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show today are Hillary Krieger, Enterprise Editor for CNN Politics Digital, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, and House Speaker Paul Ryan met in Washington and began moving toward becoming allies against the Democratic nominee, most likely Hillary Clinton. Ryan has yet to endorse Trump's candidacy. In Washington, President Obama announced he will visit Hiroshima, Japan, the target of an American atomic bomb at the end of World War II in 1945. And in Romania, a missile defense site has been activated by NATO despite protests by Russia. Tom, you know, in Washington, there's really only one subject, Donald Trump, it seems to. And, of course, Hillary knows that, too. I mean, the subject can be domestic policy, foreign policy, whatever. It always gets around to Donald Trump. So what about this meeting, this seeming detente that has grown between Paul Ryan, the conservative House Speaker, and Donald Trump, who is conservative on some things, not on others?
Well, I wouldn't call it detente, Fred. I think they've decided they're not going to beat up on each other. It's more like
I thought that's what detente was.
But it's more like a fig leaf.
Okay.
I think there's an element of cynicism here on both sides.
In politics, yeah. I'm shocked.
I'm very shocked to remember that this is the case. But they have serious disagreements on issues like the size of government, like immigration reform. Ryan wants to reform immigration. Trump doesn't. Ryan wants to cut entitlements or like Medicare, and Trump has said, I'm not going to do anything to Medicare. Basically, the problem that Paul Ryan faces as Speaker of the House is he's really kind of the nominal head of the Republican Party, at least in the legislative sense, and he has to put up with a hostile takeover very successfully executed by Donald Trump. Nobody, especially reporters, thought he had any chance to do this, and now he's the nominee. So it's difficult. Ryan also has a problem that Trump really doesn't have. Ryan wants to hang on to his House majority and the Republican majority in the U.S. Senate, and there are a lot of swing states and congressional districts and state races for the Senate where Trump is probably not going to be an ally. Mm-hmm. So Ryan is coming at this not only from differences in ideology, but political survival. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trump would not want to win and have a Democratic controlled Senate. So it's tricky, and they're trying to kind of both hold their noses and make nice. But it'll be interesting to see how it sorts out. In the end, I think the Republican Party has no choice but to get behind Trump. He is the nominee, and that's the reality.
Mm-hmm. Hillary, what do you make of this? Is it are they going to come together, do you think?
Well, I think I agree that basically the Republican Party, if it wants to be considered a Republican Party, needs to come behind the nominee. Mm-hmm. He's a presumptive nominee, but there's nobody standing in his way now. And the reason nobody's standing in his way is because he dominated with voters in all parts of the country. And there's been a bunch of different camps in the Republican Party, and yet the so-called establishment with, you know, views on trade and on taxes, minimum wage, that are not necessarily where Republican base, working class, less educated voters are coming from. They've dominated those policies. They've dominated those discussions. And Republican voters, the grassroots level, basically have been saying to Washington, we're not happy with what you're doing, and they have asserted themselves. So Republican leaders, I think, either have to get on board with where the presumptive nominee is and where the grassroots overwhelmingly is, or they have to go in a different direction. And I think what Republican leaders such as Paul Ryan are deciding is that their really only choice is to stick with this person. There are others who are considered Republicans or conservatives, more intellectual in the think tank world, who want to see a third party candidate and are looking at other options. But if you're if you're somebody who's an elected official right now, your options are very, very grim. And so and you don't like Trump, then you don't have a lot to do except to see if there are ways that you can bring him a little bit closer to your agenda, a little bit closer to your messaging, to try and make sure that he won't alienate people that you're depending on and your allies are depending on for re-election. And I think that's what
Ryan's
trying to do.
Isn't that Ryan's task?
Right. I mean, I think
in talking to Trump to have him sort of curb his excesses.
Absolutely. That's what he's trying to do. But I think he's also trying to find an accommodation. I mean, Ryan is himself an intellectual. He has been a leading voice on the policies of the Republican Party. He's been very influential in shaping and communicating them. And he is coming up against somebody who's, you know, very opposed to him on several issues. And he needs to, I think, for himself, figure out where his lines are, where he can get Trump to give way, and see if they can have some sort of, at least if there's not consensus, toning down where the differences are.
Tom, given your expressed cynicism, I'll ask you this question. You know that one of the sharpest critics and a person who refuses to endorse Trump is Mitt Romney, the Republican presidential candidate 4 years ago. His vice presidential running mate, Romney's, was Paul Ryan. And there are still connections, pretty deep connections between Ryan and Romney. I just wonder whether that... but I'm sure it's something that's occurred to Donald Trump.
I'm sure it has. Romney has been almost virulent on the subject of Trump. He's called him publicly a fraud, a phony, and a business failure. I mean, there is no middle ground with Mitt Romney, although I find it interesting. There's one thing on which Romney and Trump seem to agree on, and that is to release little or none of their tax returns. We see now that Trump has said he would release his tax returns as soon as the audit was completed. Now he's saying not before the election because there's nothing in there.
Now he said, I think even since that time, he said, well, he is going to release them. So, you know, he's played it both ways. I don't think we'll see him.
I don't think we will see them either. And it just the presumption is that the political fallout from releasing the tax returns is probably would probably be worse than the political fallout from not releasing the returns. That's the conventional wisdom. But as I hasten to point out, if we've learned anything about this campaign cycle, it is the conventional wisdom has been amazingly wrong. So we'll know in 6 months.
You know, there have been some polls that have come out just after Trump was seen as a presumptive Republican presidential nominee, and they've shown some interesting things. And I was surprised. I continue to be surprised at how well Trump does. One of them was that he was tied basically in three key states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Other polls showed that he was doing as well among Republicans as Hillary Clinton is doing among Democratic voters. And also, the most surprising thing in some of these polls in the three states, it was a polls done by Quinnipiac, which is a college in there, and their pollsters have a pretty good record. Hillary showed that Trump was doing as well or maybe slightly better among women than Hillary was doing among men. What do you make of all this?
I think that there's been a lot of attention to the ways that, you know, Donald Trump being unconventional, breaking the rules, being controversial, all the pitfalls of a potential, you know, Trump general election campaign. There has not been as much attention to Hillary Clinton's major liabilities, the frame that she's been looked through is not being progressive enough. She's had to move to her left because Bernie Sanders has been such a strong challenger and there's such unhappiness with her on the left wing of the Democratic Party. In doing so, she's hurt herself, I think, among some of the moderate swing state voters, whether it's because she's been seen to go back on some of the policies that she's endorsed, which makes her – which if you're looking for somebody who's sort of the solid, reliable vote, I think that cost her a bit. But also when she's, you know, talking about, say, coal and the coal industry, she talked about people losing their jobs because she was appealing to environmentalists. But she didn't keep her eye on the fact that there are a lot of coal workers in a place like West Virginia, a state she just lost, but also people who in America don't side with the left flank of the Democratic Party. And she's somebody who has terrible negative ratings. She's not seen as trustworthy. There's a lot of baggage from her time as Secretary of State, from her time in the White House with her husband. She's considered polarizing. And so these are, you know, things that make her very vulnerable. And she hasn't been addressing those particular liabilities so far.
Tom, what about all those polls, which, you know, I think would only have the effect of encouraging Donald Trump to do what he has been doing and be outspoken. And, you know, he's talked about he wants a showbiz convention or to have showbiz aspects, Republican convention in July. And he had an interview with The New York Times that said he's continuing. He's going to, you know, where he speaks off the cuff all the time, which drives a number of Republicans crazy, I think probably Paul Ryan among them.
I think Trump is very reluctant to alter a formula that he can say with great justification has worked for him. The other thing is Trump is a polarizing figure too, probably just as polarizing as Hillary. Trump has a positive that Hillary doesn't have. He is not part of the Washington establishment. He is seen as an outsider, even though he's been on TV and he's well known. I mean, Hillary, a lot of Hillary's negatives have to do not just with ideology, but with the fact that she's been around. You've got tens of millions of voters who weren't even born when Hillary was first got into politics. And I think this is going to play to Trump's Trump's advantage. So we'll have two polarizers, but the other thing is that Hillary talked about a lot of Republicans are not happy with the way things are going in Washington. They're also not happy with the way a lot of things are not being done by their own leaders in Washington. And so that helps Trump as well. I mean, I think if Trump wins, Ohio or Pennsylvania or Florida or even one of those three, he's got a very strong chance to be president.
Gee. Well, we'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder, you're listening to Issues in the News coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. And joining me today are Hillary Krieger of CNN Politics Digital and Tom DeFrank of National Journal. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issuesinthenews. Well, good. You can have a podcast. There are many ways to listen to this show, which is now even on American radio as well in the United States. Okay, let's turn to the president on a state visit in later this month to Japan. He has decided to go to Hiroshima. No American president, at least sitting president, has been there before. And, of course, Hiroshima is where the first atomic bomb was dropped in 1945. And it led almost immediately to the end of the war. There was a second bomb dropped 3 days later in Nagasaki. But anyway, and the White House has said the president is not going there to apologize for that bombing. Tom, why is he going there?
I think it's kind of, to steal a phrase from President Gerald Ford's memoir, A Time to Heal. I think Obama sees himself...
Well, 70 years later, though.
Right, exactly right. I think Obama sees this as another historic overture, just as he sees the opening to Cuba, as a historic overture that will enhance his legacy. Now, Prime Minister Abe of Japan has already said that an apology is neither expected nor required. I think it's a way to show a sign of respect to Japan, which has become one of the United States' most stalwart allies in the Pacific, a region where the U.S. is very nervous about Russian activity, and especially Chinese and North Korean activity. And so I think it's a sign of respect. It's a kind of a presidential level sort of thing that he wants to do to enhance his legacy. It reminds me very much of a trip that President George H.W. Bush took to Hawaii and towards the end of his presidency, and gave a speech where he broke down talking about the enmity towards Japan in the aftermath of World War II, and he said that the American people need to forgive. I think he did this very near the remains of the battleship Arizona that was sunk at Pearl Harbor. And so there are overtones of that, I think, with what President Obama is attempting to do here.
You know, the President, Hillary, said this is one of the things he wanted to emphasize was his support and the pressure he tries to bring to eliminate nuclear weapons. Anyway, that's an issue that other people disagree on. I mean, there are people like Margaret Thatcher, when she was Prime Minister of England, who thought that nuclear weapons have been, in an odd way, what has kept the peace in Europe. Since World War II, that because nobody wanted to use them because they're so incredibly destructive, that they have this peacemaking effect. And she was very disappointed when Ronald Reagan at Reykjavik was willing, under the right terms, to disagree with her and be against and agree with what Obama is supporting now.
Well, I think that, you know, Tom was speaking about legacy, and this is definitely something that's been a cornerstone of his legacy. It's something that he emphasized from the beginning. It's actually one of the few foreign policy issues he worked on even as a senator before becoming president. So I think that there's a personal resonance for him. But as you were saying that, Fred, that everything in Washington turns back to Trump, there's also a domestic politics component. It was decided really at the last minute that he would do this. It wasn't originally part of the schedule. And what's happened is that Trump has sort of reignited a debate about the idea that Japan and South Korea would not obtain nuclear weapons, that they would be under the United States nuclear umbrella and protection. These are cornerstone principles, both for American foreign policy and in Japan. Japan was horrified when Trump brought up the prospect that they should take on this responsibility, in part because they are so scarred from the devastating effect of being the only country that's experienced this type of weapon. They don't want to change what's happening. And I think that, you know, we've seen Obama take an incredibly personal involvement in this campaign, really going directly after Trump, sometimes by name, many times by policies. It's very unusual for a president. I think he takes it very seriously, both in terms of his specific legacy on these, you know, major issues that Trump is really in disagreement with him on, but also in terms of where America is at. What is the, you know, he came in saying he was going to unify, get rid of the politics of division. That obviously hasn't happened, but it's a big difference between where he would leave it in, say, Hillary Clinton's hands versus a figure like Donald Trump, who's really played on divisive tropes to get where he is. And this is an opportunity for him to remind Americans of the price of nuclear war and why America has taken on the obligation that it has, and that there are very serious stakes involved. And this is, you know, he's using the bully pulpit on the world stage to make that point.
You know, Tom, Donald Trump does walk back some of these statements he's made. Now, I don't think, has he walked this one back yet?
I don't believe he has.
I don't believe he has either.
No.
Yeah. So it all turns to Trump for sure, and it's amazing how he's had an impact. I was reading a piece in the Financial Times about how, with the headline of which was "How Trump Has Changed the World." The headline was a little ahead of the story, but anyway, he's had a huge effect. I want to raise this question. of the third issue that we're going to talk about, and that is the one of this missile defense system, Tom, that's been activated in Romania. And, of course, remember back to the earliest days of the Obama administration and his first and the president's first term, where he backed away from plans to have missile tracking stations in Poland and Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. And by nixing those things, by saying, no, we're not going to do those, it was designed really to improve relations with Russia. Well, here the Russians are complaining bitterly about this new thing in Romania.
Well, I think this is the inevitable outgrowth of the Russians going into Crimea, annexing Crimea, and continuing to support anti-Ukrainian rebel activity in portions of Ukraine near the Russian border. It took a while, but that was the catalyst. I think if the Russians had not done that, we wouldn't be seeing a ground-based missile system in Romania. Mm-hmm. So the Russians, as always, want to have it both ways. You know, they're talking about this incredible provocation, but they then say that they're totally mm-hmm. authorized and under law, under international law, to annex Crimea and mm-hmm. basically invade with proxy troops Ukraine. So they can't have it both ways. And I think finally the Obama mm-hmm. administration decided they had to do a little something more mm-hmm. than just send a battalion of U.S. Army troops mm-hmm. rotating through mm-hmm. Eastern European mm-hmm. NATO nations.
The Russians say, oh, this is aimed at us. We're the ones with the missiles, and this is aimed at us. And, of course, NATO says, no, this is because of the Iranian nuclear program.
Right. I mean, the Obama administration has said again, and the Bush administration, mm-hmm. which is actually the administration that sort of got the ball rolling on mm-hmm. all of this. They have said that if you look at the capabilities of the system and the kind of missiles it could deflect and the way it's established, it's clearly aimed at Iran and that, in fact, it wouldn't be effective against Russia. And I think that to the extent that the Obama administration actually at the beginning of its administration came in and really scrapped the Bush plans, which were causing a lot of tension with Russia, and the Obama was criticized basically for sort of caving in. It was at a point of the Russia reset, and I think there was a thought that they could show that the Russians that they weren't trying to be adversarial. Mm-hmm. They were going to take other measures to defend against Iran. Mm-hmm. And just as Tom said, was as the Russians increased their aggression, then, whether the system was aimed at Russia or not, the U.S. has felt a need to assert itself. And so having made a fairly significant concession in the first place, decided to continue to go ahead. So I think, and ironically, it's more directed against Russia mm-hmm. now than I think the original motivation, which was really at the height of when Iran was proceeding with its nuclear program and missile program, and the U.S. wanted to show that it was seeing this as a real threat, not mm-hmm. not just the United States, where Iran can't reach with its missiles, mm-hmm. but for European allies who really are much more mm-hmm. Close at range. Mm-hmm. And so you've seen the U.S. take a number of steps that actually have positioned American soldiers, American aircraft, all sorts of capabilities in Eastern Europe mm-hmm. Over the past year or so, as Russia has both in terms of actually annexing mm-hmm. Crimea, but just what it's done with the United States, where it's flown very close to aircraft carriers,
indeed.
Where
yeah.
it's done a number of risky mm-hmm.
provocative
things. Provocative, that's a good word for mm-hmm. it. And the Obama administration has shown mm-hmm. less tolerance for that.
For those who thought I couldn't remember what NATO stands for, that's NATO. It's the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Tom, we have about a minute left. What about the decision to activate the missile defense system in Romania?
Well, I think it's an interesting pushback on the part of the United States, as we've just talked about this many times mm-hmm. before, Fred. The Russians only respect strength. They smell fear. They feed on fear. And fear or not, I think the Vladimir Putin concluded that the Obama administration was weak and could be pushed around, and nothing really bad happened to the Russians after Crimea. But so this Romanian missile station has to give the Russians pause, because this is a strong, firm response, and maybe it'll have the desired effect with the Russians. We will see.
Well, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Hillary Krieger, enterprise editor for CNN Politics Digital, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Sidrak Franklin and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.